Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley. Once again, brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. All right, I'm going to talk today a little bit about what is happening in America, who's behind it. But first, it's not about right or left, it's about right and wrong. It's not about parties, it's about right and wrong. It's not about conspiracy theories, it's about right and wrong. It's not about rich or poor, it's about right and wrong. And we miss that if our hope is not in man, but it's in Jesus Christ. We won't miss it. If we don't just sit and pray about things, but actually get out and act, we're not going to miss it. This is really critical. And this is why the Lord put on my heart to have for this year's verse, Ephesians 2, 5 through 6. God made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved and raised us up with him and seated us with him in heavenly places in Christ Jesus. That is there because when it is about right and wrong, then the fight gets really hard. Because, and this is the hardest part, people on your own side, or at least that would claim to be on your own side, that would claim to be well-read and educated, but if you actually kind of drill down into it, a lot of times they are not well-read, they just say they are. They tend to be your worst enemy. And part of the reason that people come against you like that is because they don't want to know the truth. Because if they know the truth, then they have to act. They don't want that responsibility. And this is probably answering a question in your mind. Why? Why won't people get involved in this? Or why won't they just see the truth? They don't want to see the truth. It is a conscious decision. Because once you know the truth, you've got to act on the truth. And it's scary to some people. But if you really believe what you really believe is really real, that Jesus Christ is seated at the right hand of the Father, and we are seated with him if we're abiding in him and him in us, then why would you be scared? In fact, the people that don't want to know the truth are admitting they don't trust God. That doesn't mean you run out and do things willy-nilly. You always do things in an orderly fashion, backing up to the best of your ability the facts. But you get out and do something. You act because the truth is compelling you to act. I believe very clearly that if we get out, if we act and pray, we will see this country change in such radical ways we won't even be able to remember what it was like before. And if we do remember, we will be absolutely eternally grateful for the changes that have occurred. Folks, the repentance that needs to happen in America is not necessarily for the unbelievers. More importantly, it is for the church. It's for the church to acknowledge that we have judged people who God has given a measure of grace in their particular ministry and calling, and we have judged them because it's not the way we would do things. We need to repent of that. And I was convicted of this here a month ago and repented of it. We have to understand that. We also have to understand that the church as a whole has failed to hold accountable corruption in its midst, or worse, has associated with corruption. We have to repent that we have not taken care of the orphans and the widows, that it's been easier just to leave it to the state to do that, when it really is the job of the church. It's the job of each one of us. Speaking with a great friend of mine today, just really appreciate him, and I completely agree. He said, you know, the widows and orphans, you know, God cares about them. Because for those of us that are believers, we were once widows too. We didn't have a groom in Jesus Christ. We were orphans, and now we're adopted into the vine. I mean, it's an amazing thing. That's why God's heart is for widows and orphans. And look at the rise of single-parent family households since 1960. And I have this in a presentation that I do to show, do you really believe that that is not having an economic effect, that that is not having a moral effect, that that is not having a spiritual effect? And do you really believe it's not the job of the church to fix it? So now I'm gonna talk about the threat we face. I talked a little bit on the last show about this. But the Muslim Brotherhood and the Marxists, okay, the two entities that are forming a counter state, they want to overthrow the Constitution of the United States of America. That is their stated goal in their own words, okay? That is not some very unread, uneducated folks will say that's fearmongering. It's not fearmongering. That's the reality of the situation. That is their own words, okay? And generally, they are using as a strategy, Maoist insurgency doctrine. And I want to go through what Maoist insurgency doctrine is. And I'm going to use a guy by the name of Thomas A. Marx, who wrote about this and broke it down into five components of Maoist insurgency doctrine. Okay. And again, the Muslim Brotherhood and the Marxists follow this in a rough fashion. But as I read through this, you're going to know what I'm talking about is correct because you're seeing it. First of all, they establish something called a mass line, M-A-S-S, mass line. And that is organizing an alternative society through the construction of clandestine infrastructure. Okay, this is the construction of a counter state, the deep state. Okay, it's their own infrastructure. It's clandestine. They communicate, they coordinate. And this is key. They make sure that they are focused laser-like in a singular fashion on specific issues, not just at the national level. They will drill all the way down to the local level. And anywhere you go in the United States, that same issue will crop up. I've talked to state legislators from all over the country, and we share information as well because we realized they're doing the same thing, not just in Washington, but in Idaho and in Montana and Michigan and in Minnesota and in Florida and in Alabama and in Oklahoma and in Texas. And it's coming up. So it has to be centralized because it's cropping up in the exact same form all over the United States. Well, this is most clearly articulated as establishing this mass line. Okay. So it connects the solutions to the political mechanisms of their organizations. Okay. Not just at the national level, but also the local level. Okay, then they establish something called a united front. And that is making common cause with those individuals and groups who share concerns, but not necessarily the goals of the Marxists or the Muslim Brotherhood. So you'll see the Muslim Brotherhood and the Marxists actually are now working together very closely because they both believe this, that you can create this common cause on shared issues, even though you don't have a shared goal. And so they move forward. That's why you see the Marxists and the Muslim Brotherhood working together, even though the Muslim Brotherhood stands for things that one would think on its face the Marxists would be opposed to. But for their, and this is what Saul Alinsky called radical pragmatism. This is why pragmatism is so dangerous. And I have people try to argue this, but they have not read philosophy and studied philosophy and understand where it comes from. Pragmatism is the new dualism. It is being a double-minded man, duplicity. The scripture talks about it all over the place. Now, that doesn't mean you aren't prudent. And those two things get confused all the time. And the best way that I can think of articulating this, instead of compromising on principle, you're compromising on the process. That's prudent, okay? Pragmatism is compromising on the principle. And pragmatism is dangerous. Saul Alinsky called it radical pragmatism. That's what these guys do. And that's what's behind this second component of Maoist insurgency doctrine called the United Front, okay? Number three. They establish a military wing. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood established something called the Special Section. Now, this came out in documents that were found as part of a raid in a secret sub-basement that ended up in something called the Holy Land Foundation trial. The Marxists, they already have this stuff out there, and you can actually read in the Deep Green Resistance their taxonomy of action, and it talks about this military wing, which not just creates damage against property, but actually says action against humans. Okay, this is coming from that document. And so this new alternative society, as it were, usually exercises its action clandestinely and sometimes illegally. But it necessarily, and this is key, necessarily relies upon armed action to maintain its security within and without. So these people that say, oh, it's just Antifa, right? Antifa is part of their coordinated action. So you have people that are, their job is to be the peaceful side, working within the political system, establishing this counter state. And then you'll have the military arm that exists necessarily for armed action, as we've seen, where you have property burned to the ground at so-called peaceful rallies. As they get closer to their goals, the armed action, that armed wing of the counterstate, will become more active and more overt. It's very key to understand it, and it breaks down roughly into three phases. First, the revolutionary movement will be on the defensive, okay? Then they will try to achieve a stalemate, and then finally they will go on the offensive. That's how Maoist insurgency doctrine works. So when they're weak, they're making a lot of deals, and they're trying to gather a lot of people around them based on radical pragmatism, having a little bit of that violent armed action out there. And if you ever approach anything that's important to them, believe me, you will run into these guys and gals that are part of this armed wing on, you know, during this defensive phase. And then they reach a stalemate, and then finally they go on the offense. What we're seeing in America today is we're in the stalemate phase, okay? Now, what they've underestimated is they've underestimated veterans, and they've underestimated those in America who are hunters and those that believe in the Constitution. They've underestimated them. But this is part of the doctrine. This is not disconnected. So don't try to put Antifa in a silo over here and the Marxists over here and the political wing over here. These are all connected as part of this Maoist insurgency doctrine. Okay? All right. Now, The next thing that they do is called political warfare. That's the fourth component of Maoist insurgency doctrine. They use nonviolent methods, such as participation in legal political activity or negotiations, as an adjunct to the violence. So the violence will be out there, say, oh, those are those crazy guys out here. Let's negotiate something to address some of the issues they're talking about. So they use that violent side to prompt political action. Now, this is key because you know who is on the socialist side when they start doing things like calling everybody a racist, throwing out terms like white nationalism, trying to smear people under the color of law. It's very key, under the color of law, because this is part of this political warfare. But the violence then is what's supposed to prompt the political solution. But it's so interesting because the people who are actually nonviolent are the ones that are labeled as violent, while their violent arm is out there creating the mayhem chaos. So, for example, the Maoists used participation in peace talks as a cover for military preparations prior to launching an offensive. Okay, and this happened in China. It happened in later times as well. Lastly, international action. This is the fifth component, though not normally talked about. This is critical. So, for example, the Muslim Brotherhood and the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which is a international entity composed of countries that would be a majority in the United Nations, okay? Some of these organizations seem like they're autonomous when they really are not. They have a strong influence from the Muslim Brotherhood and use that in the United Nations to, for example, condemn Israel, condemn the United States, sit on the UN Human Rights Commission, which Trump has pulled us out of, thank God, and use that for their version of human rights. See how that works? Okay. Another example on the Marxist side is to have a former Secretary of State, for example, go to with a goal and intent to undermine the existing administration, negotiating with a foreign power. That's another way that this works. Okay, so this is all part of the Maoist insurgency doctrine, and I hope that this brings you some understanding of where these counter states are attacking and what their strategy is. And they're very, very clear about this, and they're very dedicated to following it to its logical conclusion. And that brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. Venezuela, 1,000,000% inflation, remove the zeros is the solution. What's the result? Of course, 40% of the business is closed, according to the New American. Also a report out of China that China holds the launch codes to the North Korean nukes. That's interesting that actually was talked about publicly. I'm trying to run down the actual statement and get the primary source. But it's interesting that finally came out. Then the United States, Israel, Saudi Arabia versus Turkey, Iran, and Qatar. I talked about this last time. I want to talk about something that is happening, that the United Nations is coming to us from the New American. The United Nations court, okay, their highest court, the International Court of Justice, or ICJ, handed the Islamic Republic of Iran, remember what I talked about, who's the majority, okay, handed the Islamic Republic of Iran a partial victory against the United States on Wednesday, ruling that America must halt sanctions on certain humanitarian items going into Iran. Who cares what they say? We are a sovereign nation, as President Trump said before the United Nations last week. Thanks for the opinion. It's just that. What are you going to do to us? Maybe we'll see if they can continue to operate without the dues that we pay to them. All right. Also, on the international front, man, this drone strike in Iran or in Syria, actually, by Iran, a strategic step forward for them and something we need to take very seriously. You know, we're the world sometimes, I think, wants to wish away evil when we need to just acknowledge what it is. Also on the international front, the attack on the web continues in the European Union. Some creative things cropping up. We'll talk about this in later shows, but I told you they were going to come after the web. They are. If you do not understand encryption, you need to. You need to get encrypted email. Need to get some encrypted text messaging applications like Signal or Wire or Telegram. You need to get Proton Mail, Unseen Mail, Start Mail. You can use GPG Suite on Apple if you have it. But this is becoming serious, and I'm going to get to something here in a second that really was, I think, extremely interesting that happened. And that is that Bloomberg came out and has admitted that the Chinese, a corporation apparently, was putting a hardware, hardware is like the actual physical board, putting a hardware infiltration spot. It's about the size of a grain of rice. And Apple caught him in 2015 and apparently ended the relationship afterwards, although they said it wasn't related for the ending of the relationship. But this is a big deal. When you have, I mean, you have it very clear what's happening. That China is trying to put infiltration in hardware, you know that that's not the only thing that they did. So I wanted to bring that up to you. Bloomberg has the article on this, and I'm going to try to get it up on Patriot Radio's Facebook page here during the show. Also on the international front, euthanizing for body parts, euthanizing by force happening in Europe. Just deplorable, you know, and this goes... Every human being, every life has intrinsic value. We're made in the image of God, Imago Dei. And if we forget that, then it's all utilitarian. What is a person worth? Are they working? If they're not working, well, why are they still alive? They're just eating, like Hitler said. You know, useless mouths to feed. And then you start doing this stuff. That's not who we are as Christians, as a Christian nation. That's not who we are. And believe me, if it's happening in Europe, it's eventually going to start happening here again. It's just sad. All right, on the national front. Wow, where do we start? Okay, let's start first with finally the Senate. Mitch McConnell does the cloture vote and has set a final confirmation vote for Saturday. And has said, we will not be intimidated. And quote, this is the actual quote, I will not be intimidated into withdrawing from the process. This coming from Kavanaugh himself. So, and it looks like the FBI investigation did not corroborate Ford's allegations. Several of the moderate senators have said that it appears to be a very thorough investigation. So it looks like he's headed for confirmation. And there's going to be wailing and gnashing of teeth over that. Mark my words. All right. Also on the national front, CARE must stand trial for fraud. Victims are seeking millions of dollars from the D.C.-based Islamic group. Now, I'm going to tell you that CARE is Hamas. That was proven in the Holy Land Foundation trial. And there's actually there's a book by that name. And this was upheld, the fact that they were unindicted co-conspirators in the Holy Land Foundation trial, by a three-judge appellate court, okay? But a federal court in Washington, D.C. denied a motion by CARE on Wednesday to dismiss a case brought by five Muslims who claimed they were victim of a CARE staffer who falsely claimed to be an attorney and mishandled their cases. So they will stand trial for fraud. And About time. And I got to tell you something, too. You know, these court documents that were entered into evidence, I mean, it's just damning. And anybody who tries to say opposite is going against what was found, as a matter of fact, in law in the Holy Land Foundation trial, you know, about them being an unindicted co-conspirator and the financial transactions between the North American Islamic Trust, which is the bank for the Muslim Brotherhood, that sent payments directly to Hamas, and they had the receipts as part of the trial. It's amazing stuff. All right, let's move next to the chill of a Maunder minimum. So there's been a lot of intrigue about the fact that the thermosphere is cooling, and that's because of a lack of sunspots. Well, this is what we've been talking about for 4 years on this show. We're headed towards something called a Maunder minimum, where you have the lowest amount of sunspots over a period of time. You're going to have cooling. That's what happens because the sun is the greatest factor in regards to our climate, along with the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which is the movement of the oceans. All right. I talked about the threats against Trump again last week. It's just, you know, again, this is part of this Maoist insurgency doctrine. So let's move to the regional front. Couple of things that I want to talk about on the regional front. Number one, Governor Inslee, and I'm going to try to post this up there, but a listener brought this up to me the other day, that Governor Inslee was lamenting the fact that we're breathing air from Mississippi. And somebody pointed out that the air, it blows from the west to the east, and that kind of can't happen unless it goes all the way around the world, of course. So I, you know, if somebody could find that and put it on Facebook Messenger, I'd appreciate it. But somebody was listening to a news report the other day, and I just, how embarrassing. All right. Also on the regional front, 51st state is moving ahead. Huge meeting of volunteers here. Week and a half ago, volunteers in almost all the counties now moving forward with this effort. It's gaining a ton of momentum, getting ready to release the draft constitution here, hopefully in November, for everybody to take a look at. It's just been great having everybody a part of this movement. And some people still skeptical, but you can go online at libertystate.org and you can check out the facts from the budget. Yes, this is not just doable. We got more than enough money to do it, and we'd be one of the more wealthy states in the entire country, and which would mean we'd be one of the more wealthy areas in the entire world. So, it's going to happen. Wolves at the gate. Ranchers up in Northeast Washington still having problems with wolves. Looks like they're going to be doing some lethal force if they have not already. But the fact of the matter is that our ranchers up in Northeast Washington are facing a wolf problem that was introduced. It's key. And Jim Beers has all the documentation on this. It was introduced. And these radical environmentalists want to essentially close down the cattle industry in Northeast Washington, when actually cattle help a lot in preventing catastrophic wildfires and increasing our economic output as a state. And not to mention, it's great to have freedom-loving people being able to make a living. All right, also on the local front, Alex Newman coming October 11th to present on the War on America. If you haven't made any events this year, or you think this is the event to attend, the event, Alex Newman, he's a national reporter coming October 11th to talk about who is attacking America, why and how they're doing it, and then what you can do about it. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for us. And make sure you go to VoteShea.com if you want to donate, keep us on the air. And also, you can catch us on Podbean, P-O-D-B-E-A-N, for podcasts. And iTunes. You can download it. Just go look up Matt Shea and Patriot Radio will be right there. All right. Well, it's vaccine week, apparently, or vaccine freedom week, or I don't know what we want to label it. But on Tuesday, J.B. Hanley was talking about the causes of autism. Today, I have Dr. James Lyons Weiler. He's the author of The Environmental and Genetic Causes of Autism. And also, he is somebody that is known, I think, far and wide as not just a leading person, but like the expert on these issues. And he's a Pittsburgh area scientist. He's a biologist, geneticist, lecturer, and author. And he's worked collaboratively for over 20 years on more than 100 research studies in the areas of biological diversity, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, infectious disease, autism, and other things. So, Dr. Weiler, it's great to have you on the show, and it's great to hear your voice once again.
Thank you, Matt. It's good to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So I just want to jump straight into this, and we got a lot to talk about. You know, there is a huge segment, especially when I run into them in the political realm, that says vaccines do not cause autism. That's totally settled. What do you say to that, and are there other factors that may be causing autism as well?
Well, in the last year, I've got a publication or two out, peer-reviewed publication, that show that vaccines do particular types of cellular damage that actually prevent cells in the human body from detoxifying properly. So there's damage to particular cellular processes. We all have to detoxify chemicals that we run into in our environment, whether it's volatile compounds in a new car that you buy or mercury in the air that you breathe from a nearby factory. We all have to be able to do that. And the aluminum and mercury in the vaccines actually impair the ability of cells to detoxify. And what happens then is you get a buildup of toxins. The short story here is that it alters the developmental pathways that should take place. And the question is, okay, why doesn't everyone who takes vaccines on the CDC schedule develop autism? And part of the answer is that some of us have mutations where we're already slightly impaired in our ability to properly detoxify and properly fold proteins that we need in a way that we need to. So all of this is written up in peer-reviewed publications. If you visit ipaknowledge.org, you'll see references to it, or jameslyonsweiler.com. And, of course, the book, The Environmental and Genetic Causes of Autism, touches on this. But it's really clear that because we're making our environment increasingly toxic, we're starting to see the canaries in the coal mine, if you will. We're starting to find families and individuals who cannot detoxify as well as others. And when you hit a baby on day one with 250 micrograms of aluminum, you're going to be impairing that baby's, that infant's ability to detoxify. If you inject mercury in a mom while she's pregnant, that infant is exposed to other toxins while the mother's while that baby's developing in the womb. And when the baby is born, it still has an impaired cellular detoxification syndrome. So this is a very robust model. There's of autism. There are hundreds of studies that support this, and I'll stand behind it. There's studies come out every week, it seems, that shows that if you test for various toxins in the serum or the blood or the hair of kids with autism, they have higher amounts. They're retaining more toxins.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the autoimmune response and that idea. I talked to J.B. Hanley on Tuesday about it. What is your thought on the autoimmune aspect of all of this?
One of the effects of not being able to properly fold the proteins, because you have what's called an impaired unfolded protein response, this is part of what causes the cellular detoxification syndrome, is that you end up having cells that die, okay? And these cells purge themselves. When they die, they spill out the aluminum, they spill out the mercury, but they also spill out really strangely folded proteins. They're strangely folded in part because of genetics, because the person has a gene that encodes a protein that folds differently between mom and dad a little bit. It's usually not going to be a problem. But if you put that same person in a very toxic environment and inject mercury and aluminum in them, then they start having large amounts of cell death, which gives you a lot of strangely folded proteins. If you then continue to vaccinate that child, they end up being exposed to aluminum hydroxide, mostly in vaccines, which is an adjuvant, and the chances that they'll have a protein that their body sees as foreign as opposed to native increases. And worse than that, there are proteins that are in the pathogens that we're trying to vaccinate for that can match human proteins through a process called molecular mimicry. So the unfolded protein response presents this diversity of oddly shaped proteins. It's a mess. We have a huge amount of antigen sources in dying cells, and we have the adjuvant which sticks around for a long time, and the immune system sees these proteins as foreign, and then they start attacking nerve cells, or they start attacking brain cells, they start attacking muscle, they start attacking myelin sheath. You know, I know that the autoimmune conditions that we are all concerned about, whether it's lupus or autoimmune components of autism or multiple sclerosis, can be induced both in animals and humans by vaccines. The flu vaccine was just added as a vaccine that can cause Guillain-Barré syndrome, for instance, in the table of injuries in the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program that is recognized by our government, Guillain-Barré being caused in some people by influenza vaccines. There's a huge diversity of literature on this from Dr. Ken Duke and from Dr. Schoenfeld and colleagues who show that, you know, widespread, whether it's an immune system that affects the gut or immune system that affects the nervous system, you know, there's widespread suffering, asthma. All of these conditions that are autoimmune conditions can be induced in animals, mice and rats, routinely with aluminum adjuvants from vaccines. And now people that are detractors from this truth will say, well, wait a minute, you have to inject 10,000 to 20,000 times the amount of aluminum than per body weight than you would ever see in a human being. But when I surveyed and canvassed all the animal literature, all the studies that induce autoimmune disorders, that like rheumatoid arthritis, in mice and rats, and what they found is, if those mice or rats have a genetic predisposition to autoimmunity, you can get away with just five times the amount of aluminum in a human vaccine scaled per body weight. Five times is easily met in a makeup day in a kid that's behind on the vaccine schedule. So it's very important that people look up the research of Neil Miller. He's the only one who's ever done any studies that went into the question, is there higher or lower morbidity or mortality when you have more than one vaccine per day? The CDC hasn't done that analysis. He did the analysis with publicly available databases, and he found, yes, there's higher overall incidence of morbidity and mortality, death, if you get more than one vaccine in a given day.
So why isn't this being taken more seriously from the medical community? Is it really the influence of Big Pharma that's driving some of this stuff? Because, you know, some of this is speculation. What is your take on this?
Oh, well, it's not speculation. There's data that shows that the pharmaceutical industries donate very heavily. The pharmaceutical companies, vaccine manufacturers, donate very heavily to the CDC Foundation. The CDC Foundation then distributes this money, these monies, to vaccination programs that are non-official organizations or non-official arms of the CDC. They'll give money to, in Maryland, you should look up the name Josh Mazur. In Maryland, the school districts are being paid by one of these organizations specifically to promote HPV vaccination to children, to teens in school. And so what we have is a mixture of government and a mixture of business in a very unhealthy and unholy manner that specifically amounts to an odd type of fascism, in my view, because the businesses donate to both sides of the aisle. For politicians, the businesses buy the time on the air. The pharmaceutical companies is the number one source of revenue for advertising in the media. And so if CDC is getting money directly from pharma and then distributing that money to these non-official organizations that are proposing and promoting vaccination, part of their rationale is, well, if the American public or if the public worldwide learns that there's a sub part of the population that is susceptible to serious vaccine injury like death and paralysis and lifelong autoimmunity and autism, then the population will stop vaccinating. And so they justify to themselves that they're doing right because they think that the benefit of the vaccines outweigh the risk. But in order to do that, they have to deny that vaccines cause autism. They have to deny that vaccines cause autoimmunity. It's a vicious positive feedback cycle. The psychology on their side is they're convinced they're doing good, and some of them don't bother. The medical community is not trained on vaccines at all. And they're told this is the schedule, this is how you do it. And by the way, vaccines save millions of lives. You'd be ridiculous to question vaccines. And they use shame. They use public shame. There's social controls. A doctor who's outspoken against vaccines, they go after his license. These are social controls. That's not science. The science says, yes, vaccines can induce autoimmunity in some people. Yes, vaccines can induce autism in some people. So my question is, why, if we're going to be spending billions of dollars to pay for vaccine injuries through the National Vaccine Compensation Program, why don't we do the research and pay billions of dollars to do the research to find, number one, biomarkers to tell us who are most susceptible, which families and which people are most susceptible to injury from vaccines. Number two, can we come up with a molecular profile of vaccine injury? Because you can't see autism on the outside when it's happening. You see an encephalitic cry, and you see pounding of the head, and you see that the child is inconsolable, and they scream, but you don't see injury. Well, there's molecular profiling that could be done. You take a serum sample or a urine sample, and you can look for biomarkers. Number four, we absolutely, scientists and MDs, as they become more vaccine risk aware, have to get behind 100% the right of families to choose, because families know from first personal experience they had a bad vaccine injury, adverse reaction. They have a sister who had rheumatoid arthritis. They took their older children and they experienced a serious adverse event, and they're worried that maybe other children that they have will have a serious adverse event. People have the right to decide what chemicals are put into their body. It's not the government's right to put chemicals into our body. The number five thing that our government should do is enforce the rest of the 1986 National Vaccine Injury Act, Childhood Injury Act, which said not only are we going to compensate families to the tunes of millions and billions of dollars for injury, but we're also going to, HHS was mandated by Congress to find the families who are most susceptible to vaccine injury, find biomarkers, find genetics, find some way of doing it, and they were mandated to make vaccines safer. HHS did nothing. When they were approached by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Del Bigtree of ICANN to produce the goods to show that that the HHS reported to Congress every 2 years on progress of making vaccines safer, HHS conceded in court that they did nothing. They've done nothing. Instead, we've had 15, 16 years of denialism. We've had 15, 16 years of misinformation and propaganda. Well, the American public, regardless of political party, regardless of religious background, regardless of race, regardless of education level, are waking up. And I had to wake up. I did not realize the extent to which vaccine injury was denied in our country, and it's a crime.
Well, let's move to the next thing that is really troubling to me, and that is HPV vaccines. Dr. Mary Holland has a new book out on HPV vaccines on trial. And this idea, most people think this is just about our daughters, but actually they're trying to force the HPV vaccine on boys as well. Tell the listeners a little bit about that.
Okay, well, let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about why HPV vaccine even exists, right? So if you have planner's warts, or so you know someone with planner warts, that's a particular type of HPV. That's HPV-1. If you've had a wart on your hand, that's HPV-2. HPV of various types, like HPV-6 and 11, will cause warts in the genitals. HPV-31, 16, 45, and 18 will cause cervical cancer. But not in everyone. They make it seem like the HPVs that cause cervical cancer will cause cancer each and every time. In fact, worldwide, there's just under 500,000 cases of cervical cancer worldwide, and HPVs can contribute to cancers in other parts of the body, like the throat and the mouth and the genitals in both sexes. And so what we're looking at is the reality that, yes, HPV virus is associated with cancer. We know the molecular mechanisms by which. Now, 97% of HPV infections clear all by themselves. And because 97% clear by themselves, Matt, you know, we're looking at a very small percentage of the population that is at risk of developing any cancer, because you have to have a lesion that so that the HPV virus particles can get deep down into the tissue where they have to get to be a risk for cancer. Okay? Now, if we're just looking at cervical cancer, 100% of cervical cancers tested have HPV. But that doesn't mean 100% of people with HPV, women or men, will develop cancer. And the five-year survival rate of cervical cancer is very high. If you have a diagnosis of cervical cancer, earlier diagnosis through a Pap smear, you have a survival rate of 93%. We're talking about, you know, not very many people. And also, Pap smears, if you get the HPV vaccine, you're not protected against all types of HPV that can cause cervical cancer, so you still have to get a Pap smear. And Pap smears are curative treatments. That's why cervical cancer is not as high in our country as it is in other countries that don't do Pap smears. So if you have later stage, even stage 1B cervical cancer, you have 80% survivorship. So, you know, I'm a rational human being when it comes to, yeah, it'd be great to have a vaccine that actually protected against people from getting this virus, because then we could actually, you know, shut down the spread of HPV types that cause cancer. The problem is the HPV vaccine Gardasil, which is the only one licensed in the United States, only vaccinates, only protects and provides immunization, and it does work against 9 types. Well, the problem is there's like 170 other types of HPV, and many of those are known to be associated with cancers. So although Gardasil can be used by law, it can be used in females 9 through 26, ages 9 through 26, right? There are other types of HPVs that are circulating in the population that are not at all going to be, they're not going to be protected against. Does the medical doctor tell you does your pediatrician say, or your doctor say, okay, you just got the HPV vaccine, but you're not protected against HPV? No, because they tried to convince you to get the HPV vaccine because you will be protected against HPV. But there's hundreds of other types, many of which are known to also cause cancer. In reality, we know 2 types of infections of HPV are high-risk indicators for actually progressing to cancer as well. If you have a persistent HPV infection through multiple positive Pap smears, well, you want to take a look at that person's immune system and see what's going on. Now, if you have multiple types of HPV, so you have multiple types, and then you vaccinate those individuals and you take one of them out, those people, those women, appear to then seem to progress with lesions that could lead to cancer faster. So when it comes to boys, now the argument for boys getting vaccinated is, well, you know what, you don't want to spread it, right? So the male-to-female spread of HPV vaccines could be an issue. In terms of the individual risk to males of having penile cancer, it's virtually non-existent. Worldwide, there's less than, you know, worldwide, I'm talking about less than, you know, maybe 10 to 15,000 cases of penile cancer all year. Every year. So, you know, but, you know, we also know the risk factors for HPV infection, and those risk factors are lifestyle choices. So if you look at it statistically, smoking is a risk factor. Why? Because if you smoke, you're more likely to drink. Drug use is a risk factor, because you're not likely to make good decisions. Having early sexual debut is a risk factor for HPV infection. Having multiple sexual partners is a risk factor. Having a teen pregnancy is a risk factor. Not using a condom is a risk factor. So what we want to do is, you know, promote, without any judgment on my view, I'm an evolutionary biologist, You know, without any judgment in my view, we don't want these other types of HPVs to circulate because they're rare. Why are these HPVs rare? They're rare because they're potentially because they're more deadly. A good virus is a virus that doesn't kill its host. But the vaccines target the most common types of HPV, meaning they wipe them out, the other ones sweep in, and the kids are told, go, you know, they're not given a license to go have unprotected sex, but that's the unspoken message. You are protected against an STD. Have you checked the news headlines lately, Matt, where the United States now ranks number one in Western countries in STDs? I think that this HPV program is driving that because doctors are telling these kids, you are now protected against this virus, which might cause cancer. They shouldn't
right.
tell
it's,
them
it's
that. They're not
essentially,
protected against
yeah,
the virus.
Yeah, essentially saying that you don't have anything to worry about, so therefore don't pay attention to it anymore. You can do whatever you want to. Yeah, instead of taking
right.
responsibility
yeah.
for their
so
own
they
actions.
They have yeah. riskier behaviors, exactly. And what the doctors need to say is they need to say, well, you probably want to hold off on having sex. You probably want to avoid teen pregnancy, that is, use, you know, barrier methods. You probably, oral contraception is another. Use of oral contraception is another risk factor. You probably don't want to smoke. You don't want to have multiple partners. I'm not judging. If I'm a doctor, which I'm not, but if I was a doctor talking to a teen, my advice to you is don't have multiple sexual partners in a short period of time over, you know, don't use drugs and avoid STD infection. What's wrong with medical doctors? Millions of kids are told that they're protected against HPV in a conversation that three more sentences. These doctors could shut down HPV transmission by telling these kids, you know what, these are the behaviors that are likely to cause a HPV infection. They can't say it, Matt, because if they say it, they're admitting that the HPV vaccine does not protect against all the types of HPV that can cause cancer.
So for people and parents out there that want to get more involved and want to get more information on this and more importantly, want to get information that they can give to their local health department, their local school district, et cetera, where can they go for that?
Well, I would definitely look, certainly I'm going to promote Mary Holland's book with her co-authors Kim Mack Rosenberg and Eileen Iorio. It's available on Amazon. It is HPV Vaccines on Trial. These are three ladies who spent 2 years looking at all of Merck's submitted data to the FDA, and there's some blockbusters in there that they need to know and their medical doctors need to know. First blockbuster finding was that, you know, when the HPV-4 vaccine first came out, when Gardasil-4 first came out, they didn't use a saline placebo, Matt. They used aluminum, a form of aluminum called amorphous aluminum hydroxyphosphate sulfate. This is a very strong adjuvant. It causes the immune system to be activated. So instead of looking at the safety of aluminum versus, of saline versus the vaccine, they looked at the adjuvant versus the vaccine, and they found equal levels of morbidity and mortality. Well, the rates of morbidity and mortality and suicide are higher in these trials, and it's scary. The second thing that they did then was when they brought the HPV-9 on, they did the comparison of HPV-9 vaccine to HPV-4, all right? So the HPV-9, the current Gardasil, has never been compared to no vaccine, right? The biggest blockbuster of the book. There's two big blockbusters of the book. I'm just warming up on it. The first one is, well, they studied the medical conditions of these people, these women and some boys in the trials. And there were events, there were medical events that happened after vaccination, and there was short follow-up. If the people running the trials said that the who were working for Merck, said that the vaccines did not cause those medical conditions, the new medical conditions were filed in a separate file called New Medical Conditions, and they were not part of the submission the FDA analyzed as if they could be due to the vaccine. Number two, and this is really the blockbuster why everyone should head to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or your independent bookseller and get this book, HPV Vaccines on Trial. Chapter 8, they show that the actual study that was used to convince FDA that the HPV vaccine Gardasil is safe, in that study, they cut the amount of aluminum in half compared to the vaccine that went to market.
Wow.
All the other studies up until that last safety study looked at higher levels of aluminum. But for the one safety study that should have been as close to the market product as possible, they cut the aluminum in half because they knew that they were going to have high mortality, morbidity. And therefore, the vaccine that is on the market has not been tested for safety with a valid placebo, and the placebo that was used was aluminum, and they cut the dose in half for both of those groups. That's fraud. The FDA needs to look into this. How the FDA approved of this, I don't know, but Mary Holland, Tim Eck Rosenberg, and Eileen Iorio deserve the credit. They put this chapter in at the last minute because they couldn't believe their own eyes. I checked it out for them. We have problems. We've got type replacement of rare types coming in and sweeping in the population. We have some evidence that the vaccine may be increasing cervical cancer in some populations, believe it or not. And we have this problem where the study designs were fraudulent. This is not going to go away. Everyone needs to get this book, put it in the hands of everyone that you know that's in the position of making a decision about vaccinating with HPV, including medical doctors, including school nurses. Bring it to your school board. Bring up this topic to everyone who you think is a vaccine risk denialist who says no, vaccines are perfectly safe, because that's the propaganda that's pumped into our heads all day long.
And that is where we are going to end. Dr. James Lyons-Weiler, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio. Appreciate everything you're doing. I want to have you on again. Keep up the fight out there.
Thank you very much, Matt. Everybody can find me at ipaknowledge.org.
All right, and I'll probably get that posted here very quickly. He's also the author of The Environmental and Genetic Causes of Autism, and that book by Dr. Mary Holland is HPV Vaccines on Trial, HPV Vaccines on Trial. This is Matt Shea. Thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. And if you need to, you can look it up online, the mouse insurgency doctrines, which I started the show off with. Make sure you take a look at those as well. Either way, get involved in your local community. Defend freedom locally. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.